Good morning. Welcome everyone this morning. You know, when we say good morning and good day, and we just kind of say it because that's what we need to say, but this morning I'd really like for us to think about the good day that we have. We have so many blessings to be thankful for and so many things that we take for granted. We have one of the things I'm really, really thankful for this morning is that we can be free from that, from sin and guilt, and we can be free because of what Christ has done for us, what our Father has made available to us. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the nice day, and I'm thankful for a nice church, and thankful for everyone that was traveling, that came back, that's safe again, and for health. There's so many blessings to be thankful for. So this morning when I say a good day, I mean a good day. So today is Father's Day, and Father's Day is a day when we put the focus on us dads, us fathers, dads. What comes to your mind when you think of a dad? Just pop some things off that come to your mind real quick when you think of a dad. Anybody. You wives and mothers probably have a pretty good idea what it should be. But anyway, what comes to your mind when you think of a dad? It's a person who cares. That's a good one. Anymore? A leader. Okay, a person who cares. A leader. Anything else? Example. Thank you. Security? Yes. That's right. That's a very good one there. I took my daughter to town the other day, and I was teaching her how to, I'd let her do the checking out, and I thought later that's probably not a real good idea to teach her how to spend money, but as long as Dad pays the bill, she didn't mind. No, actually, it was good. It was part of life, trying to teach her a little bit. So we have security, a leader, example, and someone who cares. Those are things that come to mind when you think of a dad. And so for us, for us dads today, is being a father that's a question. I think every one of us dads here, at some point or another, that's impressed on our mind more seriously sometimes than it is at other times. But I think all of us have a desire to be a good dad. I know we do. And even for young boys, men that are not married, the qualifications for being a good dad start way before you have a wife. You know, it's part of your character. Being a good dad is actually something that's part of your character, and that starts from little up. You're molded by example. We are molded by example. Our points of reference, when we face decisions, they go back to how examples before us have lived. And in most cases, it's our parents, our mom or dad, or a mentor that we have put a lot of confidence in, or even people that we don't like, sometimes form our frame of references. But that character goes way back. So being a father is simply, it's not simply the condition of being a male parent. And the definition of a good dad is not defined by the number of children that you have. Gideon had 71 sons.
And Gideon was a normal person. Well, more or less normal. And he had 24 hours in a day, just like we do. And he did not have enough time to really devote to his 71 sons. And Gideon's 71 sons didn't turn out so well. He had one son that limited the population by all but himself. He killed all his brothers off because he wanted to be the leader, and he was a really bad leader. But Gideon, the point that I wanted to make is that 71 sons was more than Gideon could really keep up with, and his boys didn't turn out so well. A more modern example of how just being the male parent is not enough. In May of 2012, in Knoxville, Tennessee, there was a 33-year-old man. Well, I guess 33-year-old human being, Desmond Hatchett. And he was in court asking for relief from child support payments. He had 30 children with 11 different mothers. And there was he may have had a minimum wage job. And the child support payments varied from $75 per month to $300 per month per child. And there was no way that he could pay this. And he was in court asking for relief. Of course, the judge had some questions on how he got there in the first place, and he said, well, it just happened. He didn't know. But the poor man, he had no way of, he had gotten into a, because of his actions, got into a really, a real mess. But these men, Gideon and Desmond, were both fathers in a physical sense. But as far as having a relationship with their children, they did not. Or not a meaningful one, anyway. So this morning, I'd like to talk about the responsibility of being a father and encourage and challenge us dads in this. I'd like to title the message, A Father After God's Own Heart. And that's thinking of David. David was a man after God's own heart. By the way, David wasn't that good of a father either, or at least his children didn't turn out so well. Partly because he probably didn't have time, but partly because he had so many wives and so many children, he couldn't really care and be an example and be a leader and all that with his own children. But David was a man after God's own heart, and I'd like to think of us fathers as being fathers after God's own heart. If we're after God's own heart, it doesn't mean that we won't make mistakes. But it means that if we find that we are making a mistake, that we're willing to correct that. So if you would, turn to Ephesians 5. And I want to read Ephesians 5. 15, verse 15 through Ephesians 6, verse 4. And it encompasses a lot more than just to the dads. But the principles here apply to dads and moms and children and church. And it's all intertwined. So Ephesians 5, verse 15. It says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. And he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's a lot of material that was covered right there. But the premise for being a good, responsible dad is love. A godly father, a godly dad, loves his Lord. He loves his wife. He loves his children. And he loves his fellow men. Last Sunday, in the opening, I had read from 1 Timothy 1, verse 5 through 7. I don't know if you remember that. But that says, "Now the end of the commandment is charity, or love, out of a pure heart, and of a good conscience, and of faith unfeigned or genuine, from which some having swerved have turned aside unto vain jangling, desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say nor whereof they affirm." And that's in the context of a false teacher. A false teacher, or a true teacher. A true teacher has the good of the people, his people in mind. Not himself, but the good of his people. There's love there. And the qualifications for a leader are nearly the same for a bishop, a deacon, an elder, as they are for a leader in the home. But a godly father loves his Lord, he loves his wife, his children, and his fellow men. So the commandment that Jesus said all the law and the prophets hangs on is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. That's the first and great commandment. And the second one says, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. That's in Matthew 22, 37 through 40. It takes character to be a good dad. And the time to build that is now, especially young men and older men. But as we're young, we build that character layer by layer by layer. It says, look in 1 Corinthians 10:24, that premise of love, "Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth." And 1 Corinthians 13:4, charity or love is long-suffering, it's kind, it doesn't lift itself up. So as a dad, how do I go about exercising my responsibilities? What are my responsibilities as a dad? And how do I seek the welfare of my family? How do I seek that welfare? Some of the responsibilities of a dad is that one of them is a provider. We are called to provide for our family. And as a leader in our homes, It's more than just going to work and bringing home a paycheck to buy groceries. We are called to provide materially for our family, and we've been blessed to live here in a country where we can do that. Sometimes we might feel like we live hand to mouth, but we really don't. Not like they do in some areas. So we've been blessed to live where we can provide food, clothes, and shelter, the basics for our family. But sometimes we get so involved in providing those things for our family that we lose providing some other things for our family. There seems to be a balance in a lot of different things. In a lot of areas of life, there's a balance. We can do one thing really well, but we sacrifice over here. And it takes wisdom to know where that balance is. Sometimes our definitions of providing well, materially, are clouded by comparing ourselves with how other people provide for their families. As parents, we can suffer the thing of peer pressure just like young people can sometimes by looking at others and seeing what they have, so we work to be on the same living standard as other people. And maybe that's good and maybe it's not, but the thing to keep in mind is, are we sacrificing in our providing responsibility? Maybe there's emotional support or love or time that our families crave more than things. Sometimes, or often, depending on our children, they remind us how much better other people have something than they do. And so one thing that we need to provide is, well, this will come in a little later, but as a dad, we can provide some teaching on contentment sometimes. That comes under example category too. A dad is not necessarily remembered always for the things that he wants to be remembered for. When in our work, if I'm working and I'm providing for my family the money and clothes and food and shelter, and I work and work and work to do this, to provide a good thing for my family, those are important things, but they're probably not the things that my family will remember me by. They're not going to know the personal achievements. They're not going to remember the personal achievements that you made. They don't remember the status of the bank account from one year to the next, usually, unless there's nothing there. But even then, a family, children are usually flexible. They're not going to remember how much land I've got or how nice the vehicles are or unnice. Well, yeah, they'll tell you, but in 10 years, that's not an issue. But most dads are positively remembered by, or they're remembered positively by, small things. Like the time that he stopped to show me how to make a paper airplane. Or the time that my dad or your dad dropped what he was doing to fix the bike tire. Or the time that the dad took his child fishing, even though they didn't catch anything, and then they stopped for ice cream on the way home. Or the time he brought candy to school just for anyhow. You know, the big things that we think are very important in providing are not really what our children remember always. Those big things are important, But the little things is what stick in the memories. So in providing, in our responsibility of providing, let's take time to do those little things, to remember our children, our wives, and to not get so wrapped up in our daily work that we forget some of the things that really matter. A second responsibility of a dad, a good dad, is being a good husband. And think of this through the premise of Christ loving the church. In Ephesians 5, it says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. And young men, when it comes time to ask that girl for a date, for to explore the possibility of marriage, we're not usually thinking the kind of love that it's talking here. Well, maybe you are more mature than I was, but when I was doing in that situation, my thought was I wanted a companion. I wanted someone that I could share life with, and somebody that could do things for me, and well, you wouldn't say this maybe, but to wash your clothes, cook your meals, share your life with, be a companion to. But was that the kind of companion that we were when Christ sought us out? No. The love here is an agape love. And yes, it includes that, but it also includes that clause where it says, in sickness and adversity, in times of health, in times of sickness. It includes loving when it's not lovable. That's part of being a good husband. It's an agape love. And yet there's joys in life. There are joys in marriage. There's sorrows in marriage too. But as young people, when we are at our wedding, on our wedding day, and we say, I do, we're not really thinking ahead too far most of the time. So, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. A good dad is a good husband. Find time to take your wife on a date. It's not that hard, but it takes time. Express your love often, verbally, and by your actions. Remember, it's the little things. It's the little things that stick sometimes, and the big ones too, but the little things, the thoughtful notes, the flowers, send flowers. They're a good investment in real life, even if they only last for 3 days. Be sentimental. Show her that she's special. A gift that is created by you for her. I would say, is almost always valued above larger material gifts, above large material gifts that are given with less sentiment. For example, if you were on a walk with your wife, and you saw maybe there was a unique log, and you picked it up, you took it home, you took the bark off, and wrote a note on it about just a note of how special she is, or how just something small, and you gave that to her. If you were to die tomorrow, she would treasure something like that a lot more. Than if you bought her a new car. It's the sentimental things is what lives on. And I'm sure that the larger gifts would mean something too. I'm talking in general terms. The larger gifts would mean something. But it's the small things, the sentimental things, the mementos of how you made her feel that really count. So be a good husband. And take time to think of ways to express your love and to show her that you care. The other thing, another responsibility, is to be a leader. And leader doesn't mean dictator. I'm king, and what I say goes. Sometimes you can get the impression that wives submit to your husbands in everything. So I say this, you submit. No, well, first of all, you can't do it that way, and love is Christ loved. So you're out of bounds there. But to be a leader, lead out in your home as God has designed. Go ahead with opening decision-making processes. Include your wife. We need to include our wives in decisions that are come up, and get and hear her side and take input and give input and come to an agreement on how to go ahead. But at the end, as a leader, we do need to move forward and bring it to a conclusion, not just leave it in limbo. Another thing a leading out is, do include your wife in your daily life, even if you think it doesn't directly pertain to her. So sometimes wives at home get a little starved for news of the outside world. I mean, they want to know what's happening. And so when I come home from work, my wife wants to know what I've done. And she wants to know details about my day. And my wife, she likes to hear that. And even things that I'm facing, Even if it's maybe just little things, little struggles, and you think, well, it doesn't really matter. Maybe they're big struggles. But if I'm facing a problem, one thing that I do, and you might be different, but one thing that I do, I get quiet. And I try to think this through in my mind. But my wife wants to know what I'm thinking. She doesn't like to be left in the dark. It's easy then for an imagination to come in. Well, did I do something wrong? Or did something happen? Or is something not right? Well, no, it's not. That's not the problem. But if I can communicate with her, if I include her, even if I don't think it, the problem might not even pertain to her at all. She wants to know. And vice versa. It's either way. But sometimes, at least for me, it's easy to try to think these things through without communicating. But include your wife in your daily life. This provides a sense of partnership. You could call it healthy drama. But our wives are a tremendous asset, and they can provide perspective to our life. They provide balance to our thought processes as leaders. And it's a valuable asset. So as husbands, take the leadership role seriously. And as leaders, into child training. Some of us that are not home, that are gone during the day, when we come home, our wives are tired of being the sole parent. And they would love it if we take the lead in settling disputes with children and giving her a break. I'm exposing myself here some, but it's easy for me. I already said I can get quiet if I'm working something through in my mind. But it's really easy for me to tune out noise, tune out child noise, and tune out things and just kind of be in my own little world. But it's something that I need to work on because it doesn't help in that child training responsibility. If I'm there, I need to be the one as a dad to go ahead with that. Another responsibility as dads that we have is being a teacher. And being a teacher involves so many things. We need to pass on the faith. We need to pass on the skills that we know to our children. Life skills that will help them succeed. And faith, pass on the knowledge and the example to them on spiritual matters. Another thing to teach our children is to teach them to take initiative and to figure problems out, to figure their own problems out. Some children have a healthy dose of impatience. And so when they get into a snag, they get really, really frustrated. And if they would think it through just a little bit, they could figure it out. But you know, that's not always so different from their parents. But as parents, we should know better. Children need to learn that, and it's our job as dads to teach them to take the initiative and to figure out problems. One way to teach them that is by giving responsibility, even before we feel they're ready for it. Use it in moderation. I'm not talking giving a chainsaw to a 10-year-old. But teach them how to do things. Give them responsibility. Give them chores. Give them work to do. And then hold them accountable to make it happen. If you tell your children to clean the fence row out, make sure that you're clear on how you want it done. Give them the tools to do it. Show them how to do it. But then make sure that they follow through and get it done like it was supposed to be. Hold them accountable. Another thing on teaching, and this is an extremely important one, but teach self-discipline. One big problem is if you have an adult that has never learned self-discipline. It goes into so many areas of life, and it causes a lot of problems. Moral problems, financial problems, eating problems. It causes so many problems. Self-discipline. And one way to instill self-discipline in your children, you can do it without even really, or you can set them on a right path by having a regular schedule in your home. Have a time to get up. Have a time to eat as a family. At least one meal a day. Have a time for family worship. And here again, as dads, that's where we can lead out in family worship. Have a time for that. Have a time to go to bed. And then a time to get up and eat and have family worship and go back to bed again. You have a schedule. Set a schedule for and try to stick to it as much as you can. But young people that are self-disciplined are a productive asset to society, and it equips them to deal with life as they get older. It's part of the teaching process. Another thing, teach as dads. Let's teach the blessing of simple pleasures. You know, life is not an endless party. That's not real life. But maybe the temptation might be sometimes for us dads to think of how hard we had it growing up. And so we do not want our children to go through that. So we're going to provide everything, and we're going to make life an endless party. But don't do that, please. For one, it kid breaks down the self-discipline. They don't have to work for much. The other thing is that becomes the new reality for them. And so to create something special, you have to go even more over the top to do something special for them. And I'm not advocating a harsh regime, but don't cave in to every desire to buy a new toy or to get something that the neighbor has or the next person has or anything like that. But teach them the value of simple pleasures. Imagination can keep people occupied in a good way. A set of sticks for houses. A box of rocks for chairs and tables and all kinds. Use your imagination and they can have so much, just as much fun without providing an endless party for them. If we create an atmosphere of endless fun, so our children have an enjoyable childhood, we take away the blessing of being content. and enjoying life with what we have. We could be setting them up to be discontented adults and depressed adults. It's not guaranteed, but it can happen because their level of expectation is so high of what it takes to enjoy life. These are just some thoughts that I've been thinking about for a while, and as dads, it's good for us to think about them. And another responsibility going on is a protector. We need to protect our families. We would all agree. Physically protect our families. That's why we have houses to live in. We need to protect the purity of our children. We need to explain to them the facts of life in an age-appropriate way, but we do need to explain and be proactive in knowing what reading material that we have available for them, and also know, be involved in our child's life and know what they are reading. Be a protector. Be involved in what, or be clear in what you expect and would like to see in their friendships. And this probably is more for older children, and I don't have teenagers quite yet. But it is something that I would like to, it's a goal that I have to execute, but I haven't been there yet. Encourage healthy relationships. Encourage good friendships. Help them to see that friendships are a vital part of living, not isolation. And the last one, example. As a dad, a godly dad, be an example. All the good things that we would like our children to become should first be test-driven and made a part of our own lives by us. If my child has a temper problem, could it be that I have a temper problem? How can I discipline my child for anger if I'm angry? I think a lot of harm has been done when a child displays extreme temper. And it can make us dads, it can make something rise up within us that we have got to get a handle on this. And so we're angry. And we might can stuff it back inside and try to discipline, but the child knows. They can feel and they know. But if we want our child to overcome, we need to do what it takes to overcome in our own heart or our own life too. You know, as an example, God told Abraham when God was talking with himself or thinking with himself, or maybe he was talking to the angels, when he came to Abraham, when he was on his way to Sodom, God was saying, should I tell Abraham or should I not? Should I tell Abraham or should I not? And God said in Genesis 18:19, he says, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord, to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." So Abraham was a man that had a reputation God knew Abraham that he would command his children. He would be an example, he would teach, and he would pass on. He would be a leader. Abraham would do this. So how is it for us today? As dads, we have this big responsibility here. And I would just like to go back to that premise the responsibility that we have to seek the welfare of our wife, to seek the welfare of our children, to seek the welfare of our fellow man, it's based on that premise of love. The end of the commandment is charity out of a pure heart and faith unfeigned. Be genuine, be real, be who you want your children to become. I'd like to close with these two verses that we started with in Ephesians 5, 15 and 16. It says, "See then that you walk circumspectly." See that you walk, knowing where you're going. "Not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil." God bless you as dads. And the responsibility that you have, God be with you. Let's stand for prayer.